invite you to hear these words this morning from the Old Testament, from the book of Exodus. Do not make an idol for yourself, no form whatsoever, of anything in the sky above or on the earth below or in the waters under the earth. Do not bow down to them or worship them, because I, the Lord your God, am a passionate God. The people saw that Moses was taking a long time to come down from the mountain. They gathered around Aaron and said to them, "Come on, make us gods who can lead us. As for this man Moses who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't have a clue what has happened to him." Then Aaron made a metal image of a bull calf, and the people declared, "These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." When Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf. Then Aaron announced, "Tomorrow will be a festival to the Lord." The Lord spoke to Moses, "Hurry up and go down. Your people, whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt, are ruining everything." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Well, last week we began this brand new series here at the beginning of the year looking at the Ten Commandments. Thus, we're calling it Ten. And as I said, what we're going to do is we're going to learn the commandments. We're going to hopefully memorize the commandments. We're going to try to understand what they mean, maybe on a deeper level, and to see how, you know, a lot of the thou shalt or you shall not or you must not are really point us to thou shalt. You should. You shall. You need to do. All right, so the first commandment, if you remember, let's see if we can say it together, okay? Let's see if we can recall it from memory. Do you recall? You must have no other gods before me. Let's do it again. We'll put it on the screen now. You must have no other gods before me. That's the very first commandment. Now, the first commandment really is setting the priority. It's the foundation of everything else, God's saying. It starts with me. This is the priority. It's about your highest allegiance, what drives you, what's most important to you, what's your focus. All right. And God's saying, you know, I want to be the thing that drives you. I want to be at the deepest level, the deepest center of your life. Have no other gods before me. And as I shared last week, you know, when we begin to truly put God first in our lives, then our capacity to love others grows, our capacity to serve, you know, does as well. We live more graciously, we live more hopefully when God is at the center of our lives. And so remember that, again, the first priority is have no other gods before me. Now, today I want us to turn our attention to the second commandment. Now, unless you're Catholic or Lutheran, you know, who traditionally make this a part of the first commandment, this is the second commandment, okay? Most Protestants name this as the second commandment. And so let's say this together as well. All right, we'll put this one on the screen. Do not make an idol for yourself. All right, so first one is let. You must have no other gods before me. The second one is do not make an idol for yourself. That's what I want us to focus on today. And just like the first one, when we hear this commandment, most of us, you know, well, you know, what is that really, how does that apply to me, you know, today? I mean, I don't have little idols. I mean, in the ancient world, okay, they did. People made idols. They put them in the temple. They had little figurines. I got a picture of one. These are from Egypt, okay? The little household idols that you get to put up in your home. And so, yeah, this was people when they first received this, they understood this, what this meant. All right. But for us, you know, who come out of the Jewish and Christian heritage, it's not an issue for us. We don't have little gods or little idols in our homes or whatever in our churches and stuff like that, do we? The Israelites, and you know, they worship God. And then what happened, though? Well, right after God gave Moses the Ten Commandments and Moses shared those Ten Commandments with the Israelites, you know, Moses, he goes back up to the top of Mount Sinai and he stays there for 40 days and 40 nights. And that's when, you know, God shared with Moses, or when Moses received the rest of the law that we read about in our Old Testament. But it's during this time when Moses is up on Mount Sinai that the Israelites down below, they begin to get afraid. I mean, what happened to that guy Moses? I mean, where is he? And we don't know where he is. Has he left us? What's going on? Is he dead? Has he disappeared? Has he run off? What's happened to him? And as they become more and more afraid, and even though they had just heard Moses tell them that God says, have no other gods before me, and do not make yourself an idol, what do? They go to Aaron, okay, Moses' brother, and they say, hey, make us a god, some gods, all right? Would you please make us something physical so that we might know that God is with us? And so Aaron, what does he do? He asks for the jewelry and all kinds of things, earrings, other things, and he melts them down and he forms what? A golden calf or bull calf. All right, why calf? Well, that was very familiar to the people back then. Most every other ancient religion had at least one god represented by a calf or a bull, sometimes both. And so Aaron makes something very familiar to them, like other little gods, idols that they have seen. And, you know, he makes it just as what? To represent God. I mean, they wanted something tangible. They wanted something that they could see, that they could feel, that they could touch to remind them that God was with them. Here's the thing. We're not that different from those Israelites. I mean, we don't want someone just to tell us about something, do we? We want to feel it. We want to see it. We want to touch it. We want some kind of proof, all right? Something tangible. So we're not that different from the Israelites. Now, of course, we're not making little golden figurines, golden calves or bull calves or anything like that to represent God. But that doesn't mean we don't turn things into idols. Doesn't mean that we don't put things in place of God, do we? Let me see. I mean, personally, I mean, for me, the number one thing that I put in place of God sometimes really, you know, that's tangible, that I can touch, that I can see, that I can feel, I can experience, is really the church. I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years. And so guess basically my life revolves around the church, the church calendar, what's happening here at the church. You know, I mean to worship God and God alone, but sometimes my job becomes my idol in place of God. Even, you know, and it's a little fuzzy there. Oh, well, you know, I am God's first, but in reality, sometimes it's just the church, my job. You know, maybe your job is your idol. Now, a lot of these things that we idolize or that we turn into idols, they are actually really good things. It just, we've got the order of them mixed up. We've prioritized them wrongly. I mean, people can become idols. You know this, right? I mean, you've heard the term to put someone up on a pedestal. That term goes back to ancient Greek and Roman cultures. When they would, you know, they'd make these figurines, these little idols, and what would they do? They put them up on a pedestal in the temples or wherever in the town or in their homes. They were up on a pedestal to honor them, to bow down to them, to worship them. So putting up someone up on a pedestal, we have a tendency to do that, right? With celebrities or athletes, maybe it's a family member, you know, grandma, grandpa, something, a teacher, who knows? I mean, we put pastors up on pedestals. I mean, I've watched people who've had, you know, really deep faith, but it be attached to their pastor primarily. You know, they believed in God, and they loved God. Why? But tied to that was their love to their pastor. And so when there was a falling out with their pastor, or the pastor died, or the pastor moved away, they kind of lost their faith. Because their faith really was in the pastor first, and not God, and whom their pastor was trying to point them to. Now, I've seen people who will stay home from worship. Well, they will stay home from church when their beloved pastor's not preaching. Or the opposite. They will come to worship, or they will come to church when their favorite pastor is preaching. Now, of course, as pastors, you know, we can misuse our authority, our power. I mean, Jesus talked about this in his day. He said, you know, there were priests in Judaism who devoured widows' houses. That is, they took advantage of widows. Why? Because they could. Because the widows trusted the priest. And so the priest took advantage of that and basically ended up taking things for themselves, enriching themselves off the widows in their care. Now, we know of people who have used their power or their position to, and they're representing God, and what have they done? They've abused maybe children or youth, or curried sexual favors from adults or whatever it might be. And so on the one hand, we got to remember that our pastors or our priests, they're not God, and on the other, that our pastors and our priests, we have to recognize that we can misuse our authority or power. I mean, here's the thing, we all fall short, right? I often remind you that Jesus calls us to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, to love God first and then to love one another, and you know, always challenging us to reflect on how we relate to one another. And why do I say that so much? Because I struggle with it myself. Not too long ago, I was leaving church. I was on my way home, and of course, I was in the midst of traffic because there's always traffic here in Charlotte. And so I'm sitting at a stoplight, and I'm sitting there. The stoplight it's red, and I look in my rearview mirror, and the car behind me is like, man, they're really kind of close to my bumper. I mean, they're kind of really close. And so I inched up a little bit. I had some room, so I inched up a little bit. Next time I looked in my mirror, the car behind me had inched up with me. And so again, they're right there. You know, they're right there on my bumper. And I'm like, you know, that's not really cool. The light finally turns green, and so you know, I take off and I'm going down the road. And I'm kind of, you know, I glance in my mirror again, and that car really is still kind of behind me. And so I kind of slow down. I kind of go a little bit slower than usual. And yeah, maybe it'll just go. You know, we'll just pass on by. I'll get out from behind me. But they don't. They're still like right there on my rear end. And so we come to the next stoplight. And so I stop again, of course. But as I stop, okay, I brake a little sooner than I normally do, and I braked a little bit harder than I normally do. Now, I didn't really brake check them, okay? But, you know, I did do something that I don't normally do and get to the light. And again, they're right there. They're right there behind me. Finally, again, the light turns green and off we go. And, you know, I'm kind of going a little bit slower than usual. And finally, I guess they just get tired of being behind me, and they come on and they go around me. Now, as they're going around me, you know, I look over and I give them a good long stare. Now their windows were tinted a little bit, so I really couldn't see who was in there, but I give them a good long hard stare, and my mouth is moving, you know. I wasn't cursing, okay, but I wasn't saying nice things, let's just put it that way. And anyway, as they go on by, so I'm looking at it, griping basically. And as they go on by, though, then I see it, and that is on the back of their car is a St. Stephen United Methodist Church magnet. Yeah. Now, my hope is that they didn't recognize me. I didn't recognize them, and I hope they didn't recognize me. And if I happen to be you, let me just apologize, okay? We don't always get it right. We fall short. We will disappoint. I mean, we have a great staff here at St. Stephen, and there are people who deeply care about God, and they deeply care about you. But can I tell you something? They are not perfect, okay? I'm with them a lot. I know. They are not perfect, and they will say the same thing about me as well. We will disappoint. You're going to be disappointed with me at times. You're going to be disappointed in Jesse or John or Laura, whomever is here. I mean, we're not always going to live up to an expectation. We're not always going to get it right. It's going to happen. See, we're on our way towards being what God wants us to be. We're just not there yet, okay? So don't put us on a pedestal. And I don't think a lot of you do, but it happens. I think more often, though, we actually put the church itself on a pedestal. I'll tell you what I mean. I remember I was serving a church, and on its campus, they still had the original church, okay? Original sanctuary. Small, beautiful little sanctuary that, I mean, it was built back in the 1800s. All the bricks were handmade, beautiful. So it was still there. They had built a new sanctuary, new Sunday school rooms and all that as this new kind of separate building campus thing on campus there. All right, but the original was still there. Now, most of the time, it just sort of sat there, right? I mean, you couldn't use it in the summer because there was no AC. And you really couldn't use it for very long. Or you really couldn't use it because there were no restrooms in it as well. So basically, it was being used for a lot of storage. The rooms behind it were being used for storage there. And I can recall being at a trustees meeting here at St. Stephen, calling the facilities committee. And I kind of floated the idea out there of, you know, let's consider renovating and utilizing the old church, in a new way. You would have thought that I was burning a Bible right in front of them because it was like blasphemy. I mean, what? In fact, one person said, you know, over my dead body, am I going to support turning the old church into something else? And I'm sitting there thinking, well, I hope you don't die too soon. Okay. But you know what? If you go there today, guess what? The original church is still there. All right. It's still standing, and there's still no AC, and there's still no restrooms, and there's still no life. See, even our church buildings can become idols. Again, good things that become prioritized over God. All right? I mean, in the church, now maybe it's not the building itself. It could be a tradition. It could be a mission. It could be music or social justice or the fight for inclusion or environmental or teaching our children or 100 other good things that we might do for God. But if we're not careful, can easily take the place of God. The good thing becomes most important rather than God. What's the first commandment again? Have no other gods before me. And as I noted last week, you know, those can be all kinds of things, turned into idols, right? Material things, people, relationships, homes, cars, retirement portfolios. Again, not bad things. But things that can become our highest devotion, that thing which drives us, and in turn becomes our idol. God says, you know, forbids us from making an idol or to represent God in our ideology or in other people or in church buildings or anything else. But see, we have this deep longing to want to see God, don't we? You know, we sing about it. One of our hymns is the immortal, invisible God, only wise and light, inaccessible, hid from our eyes. All right, we sing that. I mean, we want to see God. I've known people who are atheists who said, you know what? If you could just show me God, I would believe. You know, and I think for that reason, God said, you know what? Okay, fine. I will show them. I will let them see me. And how did God do that? Well, we read about it in Scripture and at the very beginning of John's Gospel. I mean, we read that passage every year during our Christmas Eve service as we turn off all the lights and the one single candle begins to pierce the darkness. And as that's happening, we hear these words. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through Him, and without Him, not one thing came into being. Right. What has come into being in Him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. And then John goes on to say, and the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen His glory, the glory of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. So what's God do? God comes to us. He comes to us in Jesus to say, look, this is who I am. I exist. This is what I'm all about. This is what I'm like. Philip, one of Jesus' disciples, said to him, hey, Jesus, show us the Father. Show us God. Jesus said to him, Philip, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Paul writes in Colossians, Jesus is the image of the invisible God. The first over all things, over all creation, is Jesus, because all things were created through Him. The Word was God and was with God from the beginning, John says. And so while we're not meant to create idols or images for ourselves, God came and showed us who he was in Jesus. And so when I picture God, I picture Jesus. When I read the stories of what Jesus did, I understand this is what God is like. Yeah. But I also understand by God coming and taking on flesh, Jesus is also trying to show us what it means to be human as well, right? He was fully human. He was fully divine. So he shows us what God is like, but he also shows us what we're to be like as well. Which leads me to one last idea. You see, the Ten Commandments make it clear God doesn't want us to make images or idols of God, right? And yet the Bible begins with these words. God created humanity in God's own image. In the divine image, God created them. Male and female, God created them. Now, that doesn't mean that physically we look like God. But it does mean that we were created to represent God to one another. I mean, imagine a world if all human beings are trying to represent God to one another. I mean, we wouldn't be killing each other. We wouldn't hate each other. We wouldn't hurt each other. We wouldn't keep food from each other. We wouldn't be unjust to each other. We wouldn't practice racism toward each other or bigotry or hate or violence if we actually remembered that we were made in the image of God and we're called to reflect that image to one another. I mean, imagine our world. We were created to bear the image of God. We're the way in which God intended the world to be. So let me share with you one way, you know, this looks like. A colleague of mine shared a story of a woman at his church, and he said, you know, not long ago, this young lady came to me and said, I got to tell you what happened to me one day at work, and she's a cashier at a local grocery store, okay? She said, I was ringing up this woman, and she had a whole big full cart of groceries, and as I was ringing up, I could tell she was distressed. Because as I was ringing up the items, I noticed she began to take some items out of her cart and to lay them aside so I wouldn't ring them up. So I figured that she must not have enough money to cover everything that was in her cart. But I rang up what she gave me, and that total came to about $250. And at that moment, I could see tears beginning to well up in this woman's eyes as she handed over her EBT card, which is, you know, the welfare benefits card, okay? And as she did, she said, I'm sorry, I'm not sure there's going to be enough money on this card for everything that you just rang up. I might have to put some of it back. And cashier woman, she, you know, put in her card and, yep. She didn't have enough. There's only $188 on her card. And so by now, the lady there with the groceries, tears are just streaming down her face. And, you know, and there's this line behind her, this line that's just getting longer. And she's looking at her card. She's trying to figure out what to put back, all right, so that the cashier can take it off. And it's at that moment, though, that the woman behind her, the lady behind her says, "Hey, would it be okay if I just bought your whole cart of groceries? Would that be all right? I just want to buy you know the whole cart of your groceries. I mean, seriously, just put your card away." And then she proceeded to hand the cashier her debit card. Cashier said, By this time, and by the time I was done with the transaction, all three of us were crying. And even some of the people standing in line behind them were as well. And she said it was just the most beautiful thing to watch and to see. Now, no one knew whether the lady behind the woman in line who handed over her debit card was a Hindu or a Buddhist or a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim. She didn't know the woman that was in front of her. But what I do know, regardless of all that, is that in that moment, she reflected the image of God. And it's not about the amount. It's just about, she reflected the image of God because of her compassion and her act of grace. I remind you that we're not to have idols of any kind. Instead, we are to be the image of God for other people. And when we do that, here's the thing. We find joy and we make a difference in other people's lives. Would you pray with me? And this morning, I just invite you to maybe whisper this prayer there under your breath or wherever you might be this day, just to say this, to pray this prayer. God, I offer myself to you. Please help me to reflect your image to others. Help me to love with your love. Help me to see with your eyes. Fill my heart with compassion. Help me not to make an idol of anything, but to worship you alone. Help me not to make an idol of anything, but to worship you alone. In Jesus' name.